All right, it's time for this week's Wrestling Perspective podcast on WrestlingInc.com, where you find all the news, not rumors. Nobody hates taking a rumor to your buddies and talk about it and find out it's just something stupid. Ain't that right, Petey Williams?
How's she going, eh?
Hey, listen, this podcast is fresh off the hills of Hell in a Cell, where one person on this podcast went 7-0. 7-0.
Okay, is that what we're going to do today? We're just going to brag?
What? Me brag? No, listen. I just wanted to throw the 7-0 out. It's real. Stay woke.
All right.
The age of feral is upon you now. You will now live under my prediction thumb.
You know what?
What? Is this called cutting a promo on you?
Let's be honest. I mean, I think so. I mean,
sweet.
Maybe I should go back and check all the scores and stuff like that.
Go ahead. Go fact check.
I mean, and then maybe I can gloat, or I don't know. Maybe I can gloat about like my 2-time X Division title reign and stuff like that.
Just gloat
about other stuff, you know.
No one likes someone that lives in the past.
But I'm too hungry. Let's move on with what we need to talk about here. All right.
I had to do that. Listen, I had a horrible projection rate last pay-per-view, so it's a nice little bounce back. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, you do what you gotta do, man.
And I did it, and I feel good and accomplished. A busy podcast to get at. We got tons of fan questions, Petey. But let's talk about some news that's just hitting the circuits as we're recording this podcast. Have you heard the news about Neville?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's shocking. I mean, Neville's he's such a perfection of his craft.
Mm-hmm.
I remember working him, like, I think all his stuff is, like, so crisp and good. And he'll get down on himself. I don't know if he's still like this. But he'll get down on himself, like, when he's like, yeah, I took a stutter step. Like, just, like, a very, like, minuscule, like, fraction, missed time or whatever that the regular person wouldn't even know. Or I didn't even notice or anything like that. But since it wasn't perfect to him, it wasn't perfect, you know? So I don't know if this is, like, maybe he doesn't like his spot in WWE or how he's portrayed or anything. And maybe he's thinking that grass is great working the indies and, you know, being in business for himself, like, you know, just worrying about his own bookings and stuff. So this is very interesting news.
I don't know how much people in WWE make. I don't look up, and I'm sure it's common knowledge. You can look out on the internet and find out how much Neville makes. And I'm not sure how much Neville now would make on the indies. But in your opinion, would Neville make more staying in the WWE or now moving on to the indies after what would we call probably many MVP months of carrying, you know, the 205 Live brand, if not Raw at certain times?
I don't know if he'll see. That's a good question. If he'll make more or not, it's a crapshoot because some guys, they'll come off of WWE TV and they were like, you know, mid card or whatever they were. Maybe they were lower card, and then they make a name for themselves, a huge one in the indies, and they're making a lot of money, which is like cash and stuff like that, which, you know, let's be honest, even if you're like a waiter at an Applebee's or something like that, you're not claiming all your tips in cash. You're claiming what you need to claim for taxes. So, I mean, you're making more money in that aspect. You're not getting like screwed over on taxes and everything like that. You look at Drew McIntyre, he did the same thing, made a huge name for himself on the indies, came back to WWE. Cody Rhodes is doing that. A lot of guys are doing that. Then others, I mean, let's take a look at, let's take a look at Ryback, for example. I mean, I know he's doing indies and stuff, but is he making a bigger name for himself on the indies? I don't think so. I think guys like Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre were.
Cody Rhodes and, who was the Nebraska, you know, All-American? They were trying to make him out to be the next Kurt Angle in WWE. Why am I blanking on his name?
I don't know.
We the
not people. Jack Swagger.
Yes, Jack Swagger. Well, you look at this. I don't think Jack Swagger is making a huge name for himself on the indies, but I think, in my opinion, the people that are making a big name for themselves on the indies are people that reinvented themselves, not taking that old gimmick back out onto the road and sticking with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you have to do. You got to kind of reinvent yourself because, I mean, that's what you got to do. So Neville, I think he'll be totally fine on the indies if that's what he did, if he walked out. You know, he can go back to England if he wanted to. He has more options now because he's probably made a nice chunk of change in WWE. Well, I think he'll be totally fine.
Now, this is the setup to my question to you is, A, how unprofessional is this? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot with that. How unprofessional is this? And have you ever seen something like this in person?
I mean, I don't know. I've kind of seen it, sort of. I'll tell you about that in a second. But I don't know what, like, all the circumstances behind it. If he pulled one of the office guys aside and said, hey, listen, can I talk to you? I'm not happy, whatever, whatever. I don't know if they left on good terms. The feedback we're getting from what we're reading on the internet is that he walked out on Raw. He walked out before Raw. I mean, I don't see him doing that, like storming off or whatever. I could see somebody like a CM Punk doing that, but I just don't see Neville doing that. I'll give you an example. One of the most recent things I saw at the last set of Impact tapings. I think it was low-key his contract was up. And before they wrote him into storylines for Bound for Glory, they kind of pulled him aside. And I don't know what happened in the conversation, but they were kind of like, hey, you know, your contract's up. Let's talk about this. And they left on good terms. That's all I know. Okay, I don't know what happened in that conversation, but low-key, he didn't storm off. I asked, I said, is Loki in our match still? Because I was supposed to be wrestling him. And they said, no, he's not. This person's in there instead. I said, okay. And then I see Loki saying goodbye to people. And so I said goodbye to him. We had our little, you know, heart-to-heart that we had. And then that was it. So I, even though he walked out, he wasn't contractually obligated to stay. I feel like it was on good terms. Because he didn't just storm out or whatever. He said goodbye to all the boys.
They gave him plenty of time. They gave him plenty of time back there to do what he needed to do.
Yeah.
I'm guessing bad terms, they would have had somebody with them to grab his bag and walk him right out.
Yeah. I mean, if it was like, you know, you would need to leave now, there would have probably been security and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know what happened. We just know that he left. I know that the internet likes to make things sound worse than what it really is. So they'll say he walked out or whatever, when it didn't necessarily have to be like that.
Okay.
We don't know.
That's interesting. We did have a question about how people would, if this was a smart move for him or not. A couple other questions I want to throw out there. AJ wants to know, Jinder Mahal's next feud, where do you think you see this going? Now, if you ask the Sharpshooter Steve blog, he believes that Jinder's going to drop the belt soon, and it's going to be like Nakamura and AJ Styles at WrestleMania. I'm really enjoying what I feel like is throwback wrestling back in the day where you have one champion that lasts almost a year, and I'm really enjoying this Jinder Mahal run. It's a little lame at times, and I'm not sure I'm happy, but I like the fact that they're keeping the belt on somebody for a while, and I hope Jinder goes into WrestleMania as a champion just to kind of keep that trend going.
See, when I initially – so I like that Jinder's champion. Remember when they did that with CM Punk where he was like over a year champion, like longest reigning champion of modern wrestling time? So I like that he's champion. When we were making our predictions for the pay-per-view, I was like, oh, you know, I could see Nakamura winning, and I could see, like, Nakamura going face AJ. I was thinking of all these things without Jinder. But then I'm like, wait, if Jinder loses the title, where does he go from here? I mean, I don't think he has enough drawing power right now. and I don't think they built him up enough to run as like a viable contender without the title. You know what I mean? Like, can he carry himself in a marquee match without the title? I don't think they built him up like that yet. So I feel that they got to keep the title on him, you know, to just to make him a bigger star and stuff like that. And even though AJ lost to Baron Corbin clean at SmackDown, I could see AJ doing something with Jinder next. I would like to see that.
I'm kind of with you. I think AJ's going to be the next step for Jinder. He drops the belt. He loses his rematch. But I also feel like you could make Jinder's title reign 2 or 3 more months long, easy, with having him starting to win clean and proving himself as a real champion.
Yeah, and I mean, I see AJ, no matter what, and I think I said this at last podcast, AJ and Jinder, that'll be Jinder's best match ever. Like, AJ will pull a great match out of him. It doesn't matter. It's going to happen. And I know a lot of people think that Nakamura lost clean at the pay-per-view.
He didn't.
I mean, it wasn't really a clean loss. I mean, the Singh brothers got, you know, interfered so many times, and they got booted out, and then he was kind of distracted. And, yeah, they got back on. But still, I mean, he had him beat in the middle of the ring with his finishing move while the ref was booting out the Singh brothers. So, yes. I mean, I don't look at that as a clean win.
I'm with you. Rick wants to know, how much lamer can Bray Wyatt's shtick get? I'm with you. I think this was a bad decision to do this with the Sister Abigail. I love the fact it was a mystery. You could have kept the gig going forever. And now, with revealing the puppet behind the curtain, I think you have thrown... You have hammered a nail in the coffin of what is Bray Wyatt, whatever run he was having, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm disappointed by the Sister Abigail.
Okay, explain it to me, because I missed that segment on the show. So what'd they do?
It basically was like this weird fuzz, and all of a sudden it's Bray Wyatt with like a veil over his face and some makeup and like
exactly what we said it was going to be, right?
A voice distorter. It was stupid. It was lame, and I really think you could have done so much more without doing anything with the Sister Abigail.
I mean, the good news is they're probably going to run with it. But they'll have a match, and then they can be like, okay, Sister Abigail's done, I guess, and just not refer to it, and then maybe take Bray off TV for a month, get him back on track, and then have him come back. The good news is Eric Rowan and Luke Harper are forming a tag team again. So maybe they can, you know, which I'm excited for, because I think singly,
I think they look like
singles competitors, like, you know, they're not going to be, I don't think anything exciting. As a tag team, I think they're great as a tag team.
Yeah, but they're Vikings or something now, right?
No, I think they're going to be like kind of...
like LARPers? You know what that
LARPers.
Is?
Yeah. Yeah, live action role playing.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be LARPers. I think they're going to be just like... kind of like their gimmick like they were before, it just like with a different spin on it.
Yeah, like one had like a wooden hammer axe or something. Come on.
Yeah.
They look stupid.
Well, you know, I think of like, I don't know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something like that they're going for. I don't know.
You bring the Wyatt family back.
Yeah, that's what they need to do. And I think I said this last podcast too. That's how you reinvent Bray. Put him in that Wyatt family again. Have him start over again, especially, you know, they got the Miz Tourage and they got the Shield back and stuff, which I'm sure we'll get to.
We're getting to next.
You know, maybe the Bullet Club is going to start up. Maybe we're going back to those days in the late 90s, early 2000s when stables were a big thing. I mean, that's when wrestling was hot, so why not go back to that?
Dustin wants to know, before we move on and talk about the Shield, asking for a friend, what are ring ropes made out of?
It depends. Like, WWE's ring ropes are made of rope. Like, rope. I don't know how to explain rope. Like, it's a rope. Other rings, like, Indies. Are made of cables. Okay. They're actually cables, and then they have tape around them and stuff like that. I mean, they hurt. I know the ropes that I trained on, they were cables and then wrapped in tape, and you know, you'll feel it on your back the first time you hit them and stuff.
See, I've yet to do that. I might ask you as a birthday present, turning 40, you should somehow get me in the ring, because we'll get to the closest I've ever been to the ring here in a minute, because we've got some good stories for you guys.
Well, let me tell you, if you do come to the show with me the day before your birthday, that ring is a horrible ring. I wouldn't even let you run the ropes because, like, there's holes in the ring and stuff like that. And that's one thing. I mean,
holes in the ring?
Yeah. Like the padding doesn't like match up and stuff like that. You know, and when we feel out the ring, if there's other people in the ring, I'll be like, hey, there's a little over here. Watch out, you know, because I don't want anybody getting hurt. Yeah, there's some really bad rings out there, but there's also some really good rings. So,
FYI. We'll get to the indie show shenanigans here in a minute. Let's talk about the Shield real quick. Listen, I will admit that there are periods in everybody's life where you check out of wrestling. You just get too busy with life and you check out. So I checked out and missed the Shield's first run together. I've, you know, since gone back and caught up and watched things, but I've don't know the excitement of the Shield until now. I saw the breakup. I started coming back around the end of the Shield and the breakup. So this new Shield run, I'm a little excited for it because it's my first run. You absolutely hate it.
No, not absolutely hate it. I just hate it. Why? And here's why. Short term, it's great. Like, I watch the segment. I love when fans get excited about things. As a professional wrestler, I like seeing that, because when you can genuinely get the fans up out of their chair, on their feet, and cheer, that's something special. So I'm excited for that whole segment, everything they're doing. That's great. That's good television. They put on some good television right there. Okay, that's what I like about it. What I don't like about it is I know why they're doing it. They're doing it to try to elevate Roman Reigns and get him cheered.
It worked.
That's what I feel. Yeah, and it worked. However, how long is this going to last for? Is he going to carry around Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins the entire time so that he gets cheered? Because eventually, you know, he's got to break off. Unless you keep the Shield with him forever. If that's the case, then he's fine. He'll get cheered. But as soon as you break him off, the same thing's going to happen. This is just a Band-Aid on a cut that's so deep. As soon as they break him up again or do whatever, even if it's not a big breakup, they kind of like, you know, a little teeter over here and like I'll drift off over there and all that kind of stuff, they're gonna start booing him again.
Here's the thing. It seems like when you and I talk about something, it pops up on TV, and I'm sure that either we're just thinking along the same lines and they're probably not listening going, all right, Dennis and Petey said this, and if they are, thank you guys so much. It's really cool.
That's not happening. It's,
no. But,
actually, it is happening. It's 100% happening that way.
Right. But now if I'm doing the Shield and listen closely, this is how you do it. This is how you make it work without ruining it. You let them run together for months. And then you just slowly, without breaking them up, each have a different storyline, but come back once or twice a month together. You know, you let them still be a group, but do independent things. Almost a la DX. How many times did DX or the NWO back in the day all have separate storylines, but, you know, during one promo a month or whenever, they're all back in the ring kind of doing a group thing to reaffirm that they're a group. And that's what you need to do with the Shield. And you can keep this going for a while that way.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. That's why I said they're going to have to – Roman's going to have Seth and Dean with him almost all the time. So what's interesting, you know, at Raw, Roman was always with the Shield for the whole show. Like anything that he was doing that needed that babyface reaction, they were all out there together. So it's going to be interesting if they sent him out there in a singles match alone – to see how the fans react to him. That will be the test right there.
And he'll get over.
If not, you have to have him by ringside or something. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. There's some more good, intriguing TV that I want to see because I want to see how they react to Roman Reigns. And I've told you this before. My biggest thing about watching wrestling is to see how the fans react. Like, it's always interesting to me to see who they boo, who they cheer, what gets over, what doesn't. So it's interesting to me right now that Roman's getting cheered in this storyline. This is the most intriguing thing to me right now.
He'll get over. I guarantee it when he comes out alone. Now, here's a few tweaks I'm also going to make is I don't want to see the Shield come through the crowd anymore. This is a different version of the Shield, a different time. I like the same elements of the numbers game and stuff like that and have them surround the ring. You can absolutely do that. But from here on out, don't make them all wear vests. You don't let them all wear that crazy, you know, mask that they wore at times. You just let them be the Shield or what we've seen the last couple showings of them together, but come out as a team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And my next question is, do you think they should have a new Shield music?
That's tough. I would like to see something different because, listen, I don't remember what the old Shield music is. This is me being honest.
It's Roman Reigns' music.
Then yes.
Roman Reigns kept the Shield music.
That's what I was going to say was, my complaint about Roman was he did not change enough out of that gimmick as Dean and Seth did. Dean and Seth totally reinvented themselves. Roman didn't. I think that was part of his problem. Now that they're back together, it doesn't have to be Roman's music, and I hope they come up with something different.
Yeah, I don't know if they will just because that music's so over, but it just before it gets played in arenas, everybody boos. So, I mean, it'd be nice if they have something new, and then that way they knew they were all coming out together and they get the big cheers. So this is interesting stuff. Yeah, but the reason why I did hate it is because, like I said, I think it was a short-term solution to a long-term problem. And, you know, we'll see if I'm right or not.
See, I kind of think the opposite, where this injects some life into that roster. We complain that there are a lack of stables. In many podcasts we've talked about, we talk about the lack of it. And that was the backbone of the Attitude Era. We get a stable. We get a stable coming back. And I'm happy if this is going to be the linchpin of a new era.
That's what I hope. I mean, the best thing to come out of it, if that's what they're going towards, is like the era of stables again. I always thought stables were so cool. Even when I was in, you know, TNA Impact back when I was in it, there was a lot of stables going on. I like that. Sometimes they oversaturated the stables because it seemed like a stable was there for like, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe 6 months, and then you break them up, and then a new stable would start. And all. I mean, get a stable going, let them run for a while and all against each other and stuff like that. And the one thing I didn't like about Impact was they just had like, it usually was like two main stables. They would create a babyface stable and then a heel stable, and then they would go at it until the storyline was done. Back in the Attitude Era, I liked that they had like so many stables. Like they had, I don't know, like the Nation and DX and
the Union.
The Union, the Truth Commission, the Disciples, the everything, even Savio Vega's group. I don't know what they were called, but yeah, it seemed like everybody had a group, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I'm so okay.
Hopefully they do something like that again.
I'm okay if they go there. I don't think there was really anything else that we can elaborate on. Hell in a Cell was a good pay-per-view. Not great, but good. I hated SmackDown with the tag teams. Did you catch how that SmackDown started?
It was it like, oh, we're making a truce kind of deal?
Yeah. How stupid is that, by the way?
There's obviously a reason for it. I don't know what it is because what are you doing now? Turning Usos baby? I think Usos, ever since – I thought at the end of their baby run, like I was like, these guys, man, they got to do something with them. And when they came back as heels – man, I thought they were so cool because, you know, it's probably how they really are. They probably didn't, like, go around and dance and, you know, be all Samoan and stuff like that. They're probably just, like, you know, thugs, you know, kind of. And that was cool to me. And I thought they played their gimmick great, and they became one of the best tag teams in WWE. So I hope they don't turn baby again.
Here's what I hated about this, and I don't remember who said this, but it's no secret. I badger you about being your manager on the indies because I think it's cool and fun, and part of it's for the podcast fun. But I was listening to an interview with, and I want to say it was like Bobby the Brain Heaton, and he said, you never badmouth your opponent because if you lose to him, it makes you look bad if you belittle him and downgrade him. You always try to build him up so it makes you look better if you lose. This promo that the Usos delivered, they buried the whole tag team division. They buried the hatchet with what could have been the best part of the tag team division. New Day disappears, and then we get a six tag team, four man, whatever it was, to see who faces the Usos. And to me, it just didn't seem exciting. It was lame, and I felt like, you know, maybe you throw New Day into that match or something, but it just didn't make sense that the New Day, you know, were the champs, lost the champs, and then took a truce and just disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with the New Day's storyline and stuff like that. You're right about what Bobby Heenan said. You never want to cut a promo on your opponent saying, like, who are you? You can't beat anybody. You never want to make them seem like you can beat them no problem, because then who did you beat? You beat nobody. You beat somebody that you said you were going to beat no problem. So, yeah, you do want to build up your opponents. However, if Usos say something like this, we're the best in the tag division, rest of the tag division are nothing, just us and the New Day are awesome, right? So in that way, when Benjamin and Gable won, they cannot be taking them seriously because, you know, oh, these guys are nothing. And then non-title match, they get a quick win on him, and then they're like, oh, man, these guys are the real deal or something like that. That's the only time you would want to, like, not take your opponent seriously. You're setting it up for, like, a surprise win. And you, since you didn't take him seriously, you're like, oh, crap, you know, we should have took him seriously. We got too cocky. That's the only time you would want to do that. But
all right. Well, yeah. Let's talk about this past indie show that I accompanied you with. XICW was at Cobo Hall. I tell you, I liked having that venue there. It really felt – I've been to several indie shows with you. I thought the one in – was it Bay City was pretty cool with where it was and how it was laid out. It could have been better, though.
Yeah.
I didn't like the –
It was a good setup, yeah.
I didn't like the entrance ramp thing. But this Hall really felt like a wrestling venue from here on out. There was a lot of room for tables and merchandise. It felt like a wrestling venue. And
the stands and stuff like that. And the it was really nice.
It felt good. I got to actually hang out backstage, which was a first time for me with you. You know, I popped in, hung out, and then went outside while you got ready. But this is the first time I spent the majority of the show backstage. It was interesting. I want to ask you about your match one thing. The match itself was entertaining, but I was lost a little bit because one of the participants in your match came out as a Jedi. And I didn't quite pick that up right away. How hard is it for a wrestler on an indie scene with a gimmick to get it over with a different crowd each week or each show that's going to be different and expect people to pick it up?
It's tough, especially when it's something that is – I mean, that's pretty outlandish. Like, you're a Jedi – You did Jedi mind tricks. I mean, that's hard to get over. I mean,
I didn't understand what he was doing.
Yeah, and that's what's tough. Like, for example, he tried to do a Jedi mind trick when somebody had him in a chokehold. And, you know, half the crowd saw it because he was doing his hand motion. But then the other half, he had his back to him. So they were just like, why'd he let him go from that choke?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's almost like up to the guy holding the one guy that does the Jedi mind tricks. He almost has to go all the way around so that everybody can see. You know, this isn't televised, so it's not like there's a camera pointed at you and you have commentators commentating what's going on and stuff like that. it's different working an indie show because you have to be able to tell the whole story right there from as if nobody has ever seen you before. But what, you know, he comes out to the that is it called the Death March or something?
Yeah, and it was
the
like
Star Wars Death March.
Yeah, and look,
he had the. I mean, it's kind of tough to follow. I felt that the storyline was a little bit too contrived for the crowd that was there watching. I would have done things differently, but you know, it was what it was, man. And I think at the end of the match, we gave the fans what they wanted to see, and they were happy with it.
You know, the only thing I would have done different is maybe an in-ring interview where he does it once, and you got to see that. If I swipe my hand this way, almost like a setup. There wasn't really a setup at all. It was a good, clever match because, listen, and I'll say this now. There was some drama at the beginning of the show between Cornette and Santino that we won't really get into because it's a lot of he said, she said stuff, and you and I can't really add anything to it other than we saw it. It is what it is. Both guys are in the wrong, in my opinion, but they're both trying to make it sound like it's the other guy's fault. I think they both were in the wrong. Now, with that being said, my next statement you don't endorse, and neither does Wrestling Inc. I'm about to badmouth somebody, PD. Can I do that? That's the one thing you and I kind of said. When we started this podcast, I didn't want this to be like one of those dirt sheet or tell-all podcasts or interviews where we always badmouth somebody, but I want to badmouth somebody.
Well, I mean, I don't know who you're going to badmouth. I don't necessarily have to agree with it, but I mean, go ahead.
I'm
tell me how you feel.
Buff Bagwell.
Oh, okay.
So
go ahead.
So little backstory. I was supposed to help Buff build a website. And he kept dragging his feet, always an excuse. And I was going to do it for free, so it wasn't like I was asking for money. And then finally I said, well, you know what? Go pound sand. I'm moving on. And it started with trying to get him as a guest. And he kept, you know, hey, I'll be on soon. I'm going to do it. And he's doing all these other people's podcasts. While you're like, oh, I'll get you a password soon. My ex-wife or girlfriend has it and this. But it just a line of excuses. So here we are, and Buff Bagwell's here, and I don't know what happened, but we end up saying hi to each other, and oh yeah, brother, yeah, we'll work on this website thing. Don't worry, brother, we're gonna make a lot of money, brother. And I'm like, whatever, I don't want to. I just was trying to help you. You were a guy I used to watch. I enjoyed Buff Bagwell, didn't love him, but enjoyed him. Look, he's kind of. You know what, Petey? I'm going to choose my words wisely here, but he's one of those guys that I kind of shake my head at that I feel like is stealing money from the indie circuit, if you know what I mean. You know?
I mean, everybody's got to make a living. I mean,
but that's
let's
fine.
Be honest. He's injured right now. You saw the big scar on his shoulder and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he knows. And I hope that he's forthcoming with a promoter that books him. Like, hey, man, I can't really do anything in the ring. I mean, I can't even lift my shoulder. So it's up to the promoter to book him or not. So if the promoter says, okay, yeah, we'll just use you like this and finagle, whatever, whatever, then it's on the promoter. I mean,
We don't know.
I don't feel like he's stealing money, but
we don't know if that happened or not. But he shows up. He can't.
I would assume a professional would do that.
Well, he shows up, can't wrestle, and he was in your match, and you guys kind of had to cover for him, which I think you guys did a great job, by the way, of, you know, teasing the tag in and someone else tags him in. I thought that was good. I thought that was great. Now,
thank you.
In the back, I'm sitting there hanging out with you, and it started with him coming over. He goes, hey, brother, I need your help for a second. And I look at Petey like, oh, man, I kind of feel important finally, you know, because I made the joke that I kind of feel like you're stooge. I said ring rat, then you corrected me and said you're a stooge because I just follow you around and I'm like your little buddy. And it's okay, because I enjoy going to the shows and you enjoy having me. I'm not complaining about that.
Exactly. But exactly. And I don't treat you like a stooge.
Not at all.
Would say something like this. Hey, Dennis, go grab me a coffee. Hey, Dennis, go.
Right.
Do I ever do any of that to you?
No. You make me feel
like... his friends.
Yes.
But what did Buff do to you?
Yeah, he stooged me. Because I keep always saying, man, I wish I had more to do. This is really cool, and I enjoy being around. Now, Buff comes up and says, brother, I need your help. And now I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, a million things are running. You saw the smile on my face like, oh, am I going to manage him? Am I gonna, you know? It's like Christmas, and there's the biggest box, and it has your name on it, and I'm opening it, and it's like carrots and vegetables. He's like, all right, I'm going to go out there during intermission and take pictures. I need you on the other side of the ring to help people come out of the ring. Now, there's people that work there in security that would absolutely do that. He asks the one guy who's just there hanging out to go do that. I felt like it would be the equivalent of him asking you to help do that.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I tried to get you a different role.
You
on
did.
The show. Do you remember?
Yes. And
Malcolm. When I was talking to the promoter, I said, you know, I asked about Cornette and how that all came out and who left and all that kind of stuff. But I said, what was Cornette going to do on the show? And he said he was going to be our GM for the evening. And I said, hey, man, I got you a new GM right here, and I point it to you. I mean, it didn't turn out, but I mean, at least I'm trying to get you different roles.
Here, in all fairness to the booker named Malcolm, he didn't know me from a brick in the wall. I could have just been your buddy Al who follows you around. He didn't know that we are podcast partners, and I've worked here, and I've not shot, you know. So I don't blame him for kind of looking at you like, hi, that's cute, Petey, and walk away. Don't blame him one bit, because I think either one of us would have done the same if PD, the promoter, came up to Shane Douglas and Shane's like, hey, here's my buddy. He should be the GM on the show. And you go, that nice. And you don't know who his buddy
is. You don't know if it's a joke or not.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's a joke.
So I cannot say anything wrong about Malcolm doing that, because I would have done the exact same thing. But back to Buff. And by the way, Buff would come over 3 or 4 times and ask me, you good? I'm going to make a lot of money off this. You good? You understand what you need to do? And a couple times I'm like, yeah, Buff, I'm helping people out of the ring so you can make a lot of money. And he'd walk away. And the one time he comes over, and like, I don't know if he was reminiscing or felt like a philosopher for a second, but he's like, you know, guys, that's how he said, you know, guys, I've been in this business, did he say 22 or 32 years?
You know what? He started, I don't know, but he started talking about millions of dollars. And I'm like, oh, man, he's about to spew some heavy stuff right now out of his mouth. And then I don't remember what the punchline was, but I'm like, that was that lead up didn't even make sense for whatever he said at the end.
I remember it all. He's like, you know, I made millions of dollars and I made $20. And every time the view is like this, and he's pointing to the ring, you know, the guy's getting ready, and, you know, a really cool scene. And I'm thinking, oh, he's reminiscing with us. Kind of cool. And he's like, but the one MF, and he said, the one MF thing that always happens, I set my chair up in the back all by myself.
That's what it was. I remember now. Okay.
I set my chair up in the back all by myself, and then all of a sudden, all these other guys, I have no clue, want to get dressed around me. Then he starts ranting about that for like, you know, 20 minutes. And we're looking at each other like, that would have been kind of cool, you know? It's not like you're Buff Bagwell, the NWO member. You're 50-something-year-old Buff Bagwell with some big arms and kind of a gut. It's, you know, he just walks away. And as he walks away, I did something, PD, and it hit me at the spur of the moment. He's come up several times, doesn't acknowledge you, doesn't look at you, doesn't even talk to you. And that's kind of a no-no in the locker room, I'm learning. No matter how big you are, you always try to say hi to the people in the back who's on the show, right?
Now, this is why you want to know why I didn't say hi to him. Because I stared him straight in the face and flashed my biggest smile to see if you would actually make eye contact with me.
Nope.
Because I'm like, I know he knows who I am because we've met each other several times, and he has done my Canadian Destroyer move
several times. He's starting to be one of the biggest perpetrators of stealing the Destroyer. And every time everybody's like, "Oh, that's an amazing Destroyer, a buff." So he comes up and I'm like, "Hey, wait!" As he's stepping away, I go, "Wait! Have you met my buddy Petey?" And he turns around, shakes your hand. He's like, "Hey, Petey!" And then he goes, "Oh, wait a second! I know you."
He's like, "Oh man, yeah, I know Petey, man. Man, we know each other several times."
He's just wearing a hat. I didn't recognize him. That's what he said to you.
He didn't. I don't think he said I didn't recognize him. No, yeah, because I had my hat on.
Yes, he said.
Yeah, you got your hat on, and I couldn't see your face. And I'm like, get out of here.
So I get out there, and I'm helping people. And never once did he say thank you. Hey, you know, and not even at least the fake big time where he's like, "Hey, do you want an autograph picture or a picture with me for doing this for me?" Not that I would have taken him up on the offer because I don't care. But not a thank you. And here I am helping these people out of the ring. And I just felt so used, Petey. I felt dirty.
You could have said, "No, I have to help Petey at intermission.
You were right.
You could have used any excuse. You didn't have to say yeah."
You're right, but I almost felt like I was put on the spot. Does that make sense? Has anybody ever put you on the spot like that where you're in the back and they're like, "Petey, I need you to do me a favor"? Now, I know that you have no problems telling people no, but, you know, did you ever – someone ever ask you to do something? You know deep down in your heart, you're like, "What am I thinking?" But just the word "yes" comes out of your mouth, even though deep down inside you just want to go, "No."
Yeah, you know, I'm Canadian and I'm nice, so I'm sure that's happened a lot. I remember one time we were, at a pay-per-view, and I think I've loaned Rhino some money several times to buy bottles of liquor, saying he's going to pay me back, but it never happens. And he said, "Hey, I have to..." I think I was riding with him, and he had to get stitches at the ER or something like that. And he's like, "Hey, you know, can you give me $20 for a cab? I don't have any cash. That way I could take it to the ER. And I mean, am I going to say no? Like, you already owe me $20 from earlier? Like, I'm like, okay. So I gave him $20. And... I mean, I don't even think I've ever seen that money back again. So, I mean, I guess that's what happens when you're a nice guy.
You're right. I'm sorry for that.
I mean, that's just one thing I could think of because it's money was involved in it that I've lost. So, I don't know. I'm sure there's other instances that I don't remember that I've, like, kind of just forgot about.
You know, and by the way, as we wrap up this podcast, I wish I could remember where I saw this. So I'm not ripping off, but a little bit of trivia. But last night's cruiserweight lumberjack match was like the first one since like 1992 in WCW.
Like a cruiserweight?
Yes.
Lumberjack match?
Yes.
They probably never even had one in WWE before. I mean, that's probably first.
It was the first lumberjack match, and I'm trying to find where I saw this again, and so I could give it proper credit. But apparently, the first one was between the last one from WCW, ECW, and WWE was way back when Chris Jericho was fighting Juventud Guerrero.
Man, that was probably like mid to late 90s, right?
It had to have been mid to early 90s.
Yeah.
But that was the last cruiserweight lumberjack match.
Jeez. I mean, okay. Now they could say it was, October, whatever, 9th. 2017. So I guess they have another 20 years before they do another one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what they're doing with Cruiserweight division. It's going to be interesting to see if Enzo wins the belt back from Kalisto. I really think Enzo's carrying that division right now. And I'm hoping good things for it. I hope they didn't bury the 205 Live product too much where they could kind of dig it out of a hole. If anybody could do it, WWE can do it. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
By the way, one of the most common questions I get when I post questions about, hey, ask us questions, we'll talk about it. And by the way, we definitely thank you. The most common one for you, PD, is would you ever consider going to the WWE? And I'd like to kind of answer this one for you because we're probably going to answer it on a million podcasts here on out, and that's fine. But from my understanding with you, and I'm going to save you some time here, you would love to, but A, they haven't called, and B, the only reason why you've gone back to Global Force was because of the work schedule, which you would not have that same work schedule with the WWE.
Yeah, yes, you're close. So yeah, the work schedule, definitely. And, you know, would I be opposed to a full-time work schedule? If the money was right, I would not be opposed to it. And I know just from all my buddies and stuff that are signing with WWE, you got to move down there. And that's just, you know, not something I'm looking to do right now. I got too much stuff going on in my hometown. So that's part of it. Another interesting – things are going to get interesting really quick because – Tommy Dreamer, House of Hardcore, he just announced that he signed a deal with Twitch TV.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so, and he was talking about signing his, now it's going to be new weekly content, and that's what he wanted, so he could have storylines and champions and all that kind of stuff, and he could sign contract to talent, and or talent to contracts and stuff like that, which will be interesting. From my aspect, so I'll have to, cause I'm on his shows and stuff like that. And he just texted me the other night asking me about, an opponent and all that kind of stuff. So, it'll be interesting to see, what's going to happen, if I'm on two different TV shows, you know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen.
But
what I'm saying.
But let's be honest.
That'll be interesting.
One of the two would not let you be on two TV shows, right? Reality. Or do you think maybe they both would?
That's a good question. That's what I'm going to go for. I'm going to try to be on both. I don't know if it'll be possible. I think that.
Can I speculate?
Impact. What's that?
Can I speculate for a second?
Yeah, go ahead, speculate.
Let me read the tea leaves. This is all my opinion and my guess. My guess is Tommy Dreamer wouldn't so much have a problem with it because his is kind of going to be web content. Twitch is a web thing, almost like YouTube. I think TNA might have more of an issue with it than Tommy Dreamer would. Now, you're not under contract. I'm going to assume you're affordable talent because if you wouldn't, you wouldn't be there. We all know about Global Force and their financial troubles. I'm willing to bet that you might be able to get away with it. Do you have to, because not that you're contracted, but my question to you is, do you have to let Global Force know when you go do something else?
I haven't yet. Am I supposed to? I'm probably, but I haven't. I think we've talked about my working relationship with the people at Impact Wrestling is that they know I'm never going to do anything to blindside them,
right?
Or be malicious or anything like that. They know that. So I just don't know. This is going to be very interesting. I'll have to talk to both parties and stuff like that. I don't see why I couldn't do both. The only problem I could see is if, let's say, hypothetically speaking, I win the X Division title at Impact Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I just beat their number one contender on Impact on Thursday on Pop TV. And then let's say Tommy Dreamer's show on Twitch airs Friday the next day. And then the next day I'm there. Obviously, I'm not X Division champion on his show. But then let's say I lose to, I don't know, somebody else. Now you're TNA's X Division champion just lost to somebody else. You know what I mean? So right. that creates problems right there. And I know TNA has had a problem in the past with even their talent, their contracted talent, going out and performing at shows that are going to be recorded on DVD for purchase. So they had a big problem with that before. I don't think they still do. I think that's okay, but that was a thing before too. So it was almost like if you want to see, you know, let's say I'm under contract. If you want to see Petey Williams, you could only see him on Impact Wrestling. You won't be able to see him anywhere else, only Impact content and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. And I'm not too sure. I mean, I will let you know when I know.
Thank you for sharing that, by the way, because that's a very interesting look into a wrestler's problems of your statue. And, you know, can I brag on you for a second?
Absolutely. Brag away.
One thing, when you and I first started the podcast, and then in the wrestling kind of creeped back in for you, is you were worried that you would not be at the height of what you used to be, or people wouldn't remember you. I remember having this conversation with you, and now here we are. Would you say 4 or 6 months later?
No, it's like, when did I start? August 11th, 2 months later.
two months later.
Well, I mean, 2 months from when I started wrestling again, yeah.
Two months later, and you're back on TV on a regular basis. People remember you. You have the Tommy Dreamer thing coming up, and you were getting some of the biggest pops. Like, I sat out there for your match at XICW, and you had a bigger pop than anybody else in that match, and Buff Bagwell came out, for God's sakes. And that made me really proud to call you a friend / podcast partner.
Well, thank you. And I mean, I mean, and that's why I do it. I mean, I just enjoy it so much. And I mean, these are all problems that you kind of want to have. You know what I mean? I mean, I present this to you as a problem. Like, oh, what am I going to do? You know, two TV shows to be on. It's almost like, do I choose one over the other? Either way, I'm going to hurt somebody. These are good problems to have because that means you're wanted. You know what I mean? So it's not like it's a bad problem to have. I wish it wasn't there, because if it did come down to choosing, I mean, oh, God, you can't make me choose, man. Like, that's just unfair to a wrestler and stuff like that. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Either way, I feel like if you did both, maybe the indies take the back seat then, because I don't know, would you still have time to be a husband, be a real world worker, be a Global Force wrestling star and House of Hardcore?
Yeah, I mean, something's got to give, right?
In a podcast, right?
And it's not the podcast. I definitely don't want it to be my, you know, family and kids. I mean, that comes first and foremost.
Well, second behind the podcast.
Okay, podcast first.
Yes, I'll take that.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm sprinkling in the indie dates, and it's great. TNA schedule is so great right now. Just because, I mean, I still haven't been back there, and I'm not going back for a month. I mean, that's good to me, because then I can do other stuff like my indies and sprinkling that and all that kind of stuff, and I do all that in my spare time. It does take away from my family time, which absolutely sucks, That's why I like taking like that Cobo Hall show. Mm-hmm. That was great because I could still spend all day with my family. Then we could go out, head to the show. I could come home that night and then spend all the next day, not have to worry about getting on an airplane and missing half a day with my kids and all that stuff. So I love doing local shows. But yeah, God, I mean, it's a good problem to have, to be wanted and be overbooked. Definitely a good problem to have.
And I'll tell you something that struck me nice. You had told me, and this is part of a wrestling perspective, something you don't think about, that, you know, back in the day, wrestling for you was not as fun because you didn't have anybody to share it with. I mean, you had your friends in the back, but now you have someone that'll drive with you, talk to you. You know, sometimes we talk about wrestling, sometimes we don't. We get to the show, we hang out, and we just goof around and have a good time. And then you wrestle, you come back, we wait for you to get paid, and sometimes we get in the car and we drive back. But you have someone to hang out with, and and you kind of had said, I'm having more fun this time around because there's somebody to share the experience with. So thank you for letting me in on this experience, because as a lifelong wrestling fan, I've never been to an indie show. I always hear, from my perspective, you hear all the negative about them. And now I'm going to these shows, and some shows are better than others, but I'm having fun being there. And it, you know, it makes me want to do it. Not that I'm going to get in the ring and wrestle, but it makes, you know, I sit there and go, boy, I might actually think about going to a wrestling school to learn how to be a manager or something. I'd manage an indie guy, you know, once a month just for fun.
Yeah, man. And that's why a lot of people get into wrestling. Exactly what you said. Like, at least you're being more realistic about it than some of the people that I've helped train in wrestling. Like, you know that you're not going to be a professional athlete. No. And you know, at this time and age, fine. You know, you understand. But you're like, I can manage. You know, I have a mind for wrestling. If I learned how to do A, B, and C, and X, Y, and Z, I could put some things together and I could go and be a part of the show. And that's what a lot of us wrestlers, before we become professional wrestlers, that's all we want to be. We want to be part of the show. I remember when I first got in the wrestling ring, my goal was to have one live wrestling match. I told Scott D'Amore, that's my goal. If I make that goal, I've succeeded. And now look where I'm at now. So, I mean, you know, goals always change and everything. But that's good that that's what you wanted. And I mean, maybe we can make it happen. And what's good is, when we were sitting there and talking and stuff like that, and I said, I'm having a lot better this time around than my first run, is because, you know, a lot of things would kind of piss me off before. Like, if things didn't go a certain way or whatever, just because I took the business so seriously and I don't know what it was. Like, if things didn't make sense, it would upset me because I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Why can't people see it and stuff like that? And now I'm just like, whatever. If something doesn't make sense, big deal, man. I'm having a good time. I'm here with my buddy Dennis. And I like you not being in the wrestling business per se. You can look at things and you could pick things out. And I could be like, yes, thank you. You see that too? Okay, great. Why doesn't everybody else see that? It's good if somebody, and I wouldn't call you a layman because you know more than the normal person when it comes to wrestling, but you're close as it gets to a layman, at least backstage, because you can look at something and say, hey, what that doesn't make sense, or that, you know, why'd they do that or whatever. Thank you. If you can see it, then that's what exactly everybody in the audience is thinking too.
I know exactly what you mean, because I don't pretend to know everything. And, you know, if we start talking about things, I'm okay with sounding stupid or giving you a stupid idea. And, you know, if I say something stupid, you can look at me and go, damn, no, Dennis, just sit there in the corner and be quiet. You know, because
Yeah, like when you said, I'm your ring rat. And I'm like, no, don't say that.
No.
I'm like, that's not – the stooge is the proper word. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when you – it's cute. To me, it's cute when you use that.
I'm going to do it more often. You patted me
but
on the head.
But you're learning, man. Yeah. You're learning.
But and we're going to wrap this up. I know that we're both busy, but I'm having a blast because, to me, it's like when I first started radio. You know, never in a million years would I ever think – when I started doing a fantasy football podcast, I never thought I'd work at ESPN. I worked at ESPN. Never then I thought I'd have a radio show. I have a radio show. Then I go to Fox. I have a TV show. I had a TV show in New York. So it's not like, you know, I went to school for this. So then now I'm doing it with wrestling. We start a podcast. Never in a million years would I really think that you would come back and wrestle and I'd get to watch you. Well, here I am. Now I'm going to local shows with you. And now I'm hanging out in the back with you and not embarrassing you, by the way. That's the biggest key.
Oh, I wouldn't bring you backstage if I thought you were embarrassing me.
Well, I mean,
definitely not.
I mean,
dude, I would take you to TNA, man. Like, I really wish you could come to the show this Saturday in Windsor.
Yeah, I
with,
do too.
Like Rey Mysterio and Tito Santana, like Scott D'Amore. His Border City Wrestling puts on, I feel like, one of the best independent wrestling shows. It looks so professional, you would think that you were at a TV taping, or at least like a WWE house show. Like, it's so professional. But that's Scott, because he's been in the business for so long, has worked, you know, as an agent and stuff, knows how things should be produced and ran and stuff like that. He has the one up on regular indie promoters. Why does he still run an independent show? I don't know. Probably because he loves it. But I really wish you could see that show. Actually, part of me is glad that you won't be there, because then nothing will ever compare to that show. You know what I mean?
Right. It can. And as we wrap this up, I've said this three times, and I did have one geek out moment at XICW, and you and I are sitting in the back hanging out, and I look up, and there's James Ellsworth and Shelton Benjamin standing there.
Now, yeah, because they picked up the two
ladies,
Mae Young Classic wrestlers.
Right.
Yes.
Now, not pick up as in date, but they escorted them somewhere because there was a WWE.
Yeah, they're.
I don't want to make it sound like they were hitting on them, but you know, Hell in a Cell was. Yeah. Because I don't know any of their relationship statuses, and that's the last thing we want to do. But I look up and I'm like, it's James Ellsworth. And I don't know why he did that. I enjoy what James Ellsworth has done. He's gone from one-off jobber to a main character on SmackDown, which, you know what, it gives anybody hope. So I respect James Ellsworth in that manner. So it just was caught me by surprise when I saw them just walk right in.
Yeah, as if it was no big deal. Yeah. But I've learned that any indie show I go to, somebody might pop in just because they're in town or they live in the area or whatever. I mean, when I used to work for PWG in California, like other guys were notorious for just popping in, and I'm like, what are you doing here? Like, you know, you work for WWE. Like, it just happens all the time. And it's one big knit close circle, the WWE community, or not WWE, the wrestling community. It's like we all kind of know each other and stuff. We've all kind of, without meeting each other, know each other. Like, for example, the first time I met Paul London, it was at an indie show, and I went up and I introduced myself because that's the professional thing to do. And he looks at me and he goes, Petey, he's like, you don't have to introduce yourself. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you know, this guy's cool. Some people you have to introduce yourself to because you don't know if they watch or anything like that. So, it was cool that they stopped by.
All right, let's wrap this up. There are things that we're going to talk about in the next podcast. The handshake, that's for next podcast. And we'll tease it with that.
The handshake.
The handshake that it took me all night to figure it out. But
Let's
promote. PD, where can people find you?
On Twitter, IPD Williams. And, where else can they find me? Impact Wrestling every Thursday, Pop TV. Probably coming up on Twitch TV, House of Hardcore. I'm not sure, but probably there too.
Interesting. You heard that conversation. You can find me at Dennis77Farrell. You can find the podcast on Wrestling Inc. Or go, people, We have a new website. It's called Wrestling Perspective Podcast. I know it's a lot to type in, but type it in. You can go there, become, you know, click the social media link or whatever it is on the website, and like our Facebook page. You can follow both of us on Twitter from that website. You can find the podcast there. We have the Sharpshooter blog, which we're waiting for a new one. It's almost the end of the week, gloating about 7-0 or something. So we have a full, one more time, but, we have that there, but, go to the website, give it a hit, like the podcast, subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. Once again, thanks Wrestling Inc. Thanks Wrestling Perspective fans. We look to hear from you. Follow us and, be part of the show. As you hear, we ask your questions. Petey, I'll see you next week, my friend.
All right, buddy.